It's 3:47. We're running a bit late today, and I'd like to apologize, but it is Monday, February 27th. And with us, we have Representative Thompson, Representative Sadler, Representative Miller, and myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We also have two members on the way. We originally had two bills on the agenda for today, but House Bill 300 is being held over for a little bit more work, and we've been joined by Speaker Chenault. So the next item, and the only item left on the agenda today, is House Bill 259, Pharmacy Audits, and we've got one half of the co-primes with us.
One half of the tag team match.
Good afternoon. Hi.
Please state your name and affiliation, and welcome back, Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Representative Kathy Munoz, District 4. Thank you for hearing the bill today. I think, you know, I really should join this committee.
I've been now you're spending enough time here.
Would you like my spot?
Yeah.
I can make it happen.
He knows a guy.
Representative Peggy. Peggy Wilson will also join me and provide testimony at the beginning of the hearing here. But if I can start.
We've been joined by Representative great. Wilson and Representative Johnson. So I believe we've got everybody that's coming. Sorry about that. Representative Wilson, could you state your name and affiliation for the record? And we'll have you both on record then.
Okay. Representative Peggy Wilson, District 2.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Ready? Okay. Passage of House Bill 259 will establish procedures.
To reach assistance, press 0. To enter a breakout session, press.
Back on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Passage of House Bill 259 will establish procedures and guidelines for the auditing of pharmacy records so that all pharmacies are held to the same standards. This bill is really about establishing common courtesy guidelines for the conduct of these audits. It has been introduced by the request of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. Some of the major items in the bill are, number one, the bill would give pharmacists time to comply with an audit and adequate notice of one. The second thing that it would do would prevent pharmacists from being accused of fraud when they commit a small clerical, record-keeping, or typographical error. I heard an example of this morning when I met with a pharmacist. He explained, told me of a situation where a pharmacist had filled a prescription for a 30-day prescription of a medication, and the individual due to a clerical error got a 31-day prescription, and when the audit happened, that type of situation then prevents the pharmacist from getting any reimbursement for that prescription. The entire prescription reimbursement is wiped out just due to a small error of, you know, a one-day error, so to speak. It's really an unfair process that's currently in practice. Another thing that the bill would do, it would prevent the practice of something called extrapolation, which is a method of projecting the cost of one mistake over several cases, or in some case, several years. So, for example, if a pharmacist was filling a prescription and maybe there was a 25-cent error on the prescription, the audit could go back for years and look at every single prescription that pharmacy filled of that type of medication and add a 25-cent charge on every single prescription. In Alaska, this happened just recently due to a very small clerical error. A pharmacist was given a bill of over $7,000 to make it right. Another thing that the bill would do would ban the practice of auditors receiving compensation based on a percentage of what they recover from pharmacists. In my view, this is just wrong. It should not be driven by how much money can be recovered from the audit. It should be based on the facts. Pharmacists acknowledge that audits are a good tool to protect the public and detect fraud or abuse, but they say sometimes audits may be unreasonable and used in a way to deprive them of fair reimbursement for their services. There may be times when pharmacists may give someone the right drug, in the right dose, but perhaps a clerical or typographical error in billing occurred, and they will not get paid at all for that particular prescription, as I related earlier. House Bill 259 is aimed at protecting the public from potential abuse while at the same time assuring that pharmacists face fair, reasonable, and consistent audits. The measure is supported by the Alaska Pharmacists Association, the National Community Pharmacists Association, and the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. And Representative Wilson would also like to make a statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome again.
Auditors have shown gross abuse of the power that they have for the audits. They get paid by a percentage of the money that they get back for the insurance company, so they're nitpicking to the extreme, and then they extrapolating the amounts to fill their own pockets. This has got to stop. I mean, it's totally unfair, the practices that they're using, and I would almost say it's unethical. So we've got, if you go to the page in your packet and look at Alaska Pharmacists Association, there's examples of the abuse that has taken place. That's just some examples. And things like they received an audit from insurance company about a year after that and sent the copies of the prescription, and then they later received a notice from Aetna that they would be recouping the total cost of the prescription, including the dispensing fee. And, you know, that's not even something that they would get. It's just ridiculous what they're trying to do. They're trying to just shove as much money back as they can when it's not even money that would normally go to them. There are, on this specific page, there's five examples, and I've actually got pharmacists from my district online that are waiting to talk, and so I won't go into them, into some of that. But Dirk White from Sitka is online, and there's also a Tom Hodell online that is going to be talking about one of the other examples in example four here. So it's not just it's happening in a few places. It's happening all over the state, and it's not right.
I think it's happening all over the industry as well. Who's going to walk us through the sectional? Is that going to be Chris, or is that going to be?
Yes, Christopher Clark from my office, and with him, Barry Christensen, who is the state chair of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. With your, okay.
Chris, we'll take them one at a time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Christopher Clark, A2 Representative Kathy Munoz. The bill is based on model legislation, and first I'd like to say thank you to Representative Sadler's staff for calling into question one of my attempts to simplify this bill in the sectional. There are four sections here. The easiest one's the last one, that's the immediate effective date, and the first one is simply stating the intent to help for the public mostly understand what we're trying to do, set standards for pharmacy audits. And section two, I try to simplify and get it all down as to what we are trying to set. And Representative Sather's staff questioned the item bullet called auditor qualifications. That was my attempt to. Try to simplify what subsection four does, which is having a qualified pharmacist involved in certain cases to help explain what these records are. But for the most part, this is just an attempt to provide common decency, if you will, or certain kind of courtesy as to when a pharmacist can fairly expect to be audited, so that an audit doesn't necessarily occur during the first of the month when pharmacists are busy filling up a lot of orders, or let's say you want to go moose hunting and you have your permit to go a certain time or participate in the Golden Horse Salmon Derby. You find a way so there's some flexibility so that an audit can occur at a time when it can be worked out mutually for all of them. So that's why you see in here scheduling of audits, standards, what to do with errors. There's concern that sometimes these small errors, clerical errors, are being amplified into something more than they really should be, and or being used for the practice of extrapolation. Perhaps that is the most important item here in the bill, is subsection 9, which deals with the issue of extrapolation. We hear from pharmacists that their errors are being used, if you will, to extrapolate and apply the penalty over several cases instead of just the one. So that's why you'll see that language in there as well. It might be better to have a better understanding of this bill to actually hear from the pharmacists themselves, because they'll provide you the various anecdotes that they've experienced in which they this bill is intended to address. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm available for any questions or hear from the pharmacists themselves.
Any questions for Chris? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's a desk audit?
Thank you for asking that. Through the chairman, there are two kinds of audits. There is the desk audit, where the pharmacist is asked to, can you tell us what your records are, and then they can do it literally at their desk, and versus the on-site audit, where an auditor comes in and visits your shop and asks to see your records and so forth.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me turn your attention to page 2, line 13. In here, section 6, it says a clerical error, record-keeping error, typographical error, or Scrivener's error may not constitute fraud. And I'm not sure what the word may means there. Does that mean you can't do it? Nope. Or does that mean it's conditional? Maybe, maybe not. It's just not. Can we clarify that?
Thank you. Through the chairman, this is common parlance in the way the Legislative Legal Services Department drafts legislation. A may not equals a shall not.
Can't do it. Okay.
Where did the model bill come from?
I actually got it from the Alaska Pharmacists Association, and we pretty much took what they had given and said, okay, Legislative Legal Services, take this and please put this in something that we can read in Alaska statutes. So they, based on the experiences of 15 or 20 states, I am told.
Representative Johnson?
And one more thing, Mr. Chairman, if I may, forgive me. We have had preliminary meetings, if you will, with some state agencies, such as the Department of Health and Social Services, John Sherwood in the back of the room here, and the Department of Administration. Some of the concerns they've expressed, so we are seeing this as a good opening start of the discourse on how we can try to come up with a system that's fair to pharmacists while assuring the public that that there will not be any compromise in detecting fraud or abuse.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hey, Chris, I'm looking at page 2 on line 11, and as case of model legislation, sometimes it takes a little bit of dicing and stretching to make it fit in Alaska, but this is a paragraph for subsection 5 that says each pharmacy shall be audited using the same standards and parameters as other similarly situated pharmacies. In Alaska, there's a great variety of all kinds of retail establishments. How many different classes or categories of pharmacies that might divide into similarly situated are there?
Through the chairman, thank you, Representative Sadler, for asking that. I think I may be better off to give you a more authoritative response from the pharmacists themselves, but in my estimation, and I stand to be corrected, if, for example, you have pharmacies in Anchorage, I would think that those are similarly situated in what they face in terms of cost and demands and so forth. I mean, obviously, what you face in a place like Nome will differ from what you face in Eagle River. But I don't know if I can give you anything more specific than that. That's what we were trying to address.
Well, that's what we get there.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Who pays for the audits?
My understanding right now is that, I probably should leave that to the pharmacists themselves. I have my understanding of it, but I'm not sure if I have a full and complete understanding of that. It seems to me it's in some ways has come out of those who have, I've heard, and I'll have to have the pharmacists clarify this, and that in some ways they in part pay for it, but it's also from the entities themselves that are hire them to for legitimate reasons to make sure there's no cases of fraud or abuse.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I ask is basically define, or the auditor must be based on the overpayment or underpayment must be based on the actual overpayment or underpayment. And I'm wondering if you find one, if you're not setting yourself up for more audits so that you just keep going and going and going until you find enough to make it worthwhile, and are we actually going to be, by having this in there, are we actually going to be encouraging more audits and more time in the audits as opposed to just saying, well, there was three of them, they did 3,000. So, I mean, I understand that there's a pitfall in extrapolating out, but I also understand you don't have to go through every piece of paper if you don't do it that way. So I'm just curious as, and maybe the pharmacists are the best to answer that, because I'm sure they don't want auditors in there going over every little thing over every pharmacy. So, I mean, is there a trade-off there?
Through the chairman, I it was part my response as well, beware of the law of unintended consequences. And I think for a better answer on that, I think we need to hear from the pharmacist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And the gentleman you were working with primarily was sitting directly behind you, and that is that Barry Christensen?
It is indeed.
Darn, I'm good. Thanks a lot, Chris.
On so many levels.
Mr. Christensen, if you could join us.
And maybe through the chair, if you can clarify the answer I gave to Representative Johnson earlier about who pays for these audits. I feel more comfortable for the record.
I think we'll open it up to the public testimony. I've got a feeling that you're going to represent a certain segment.
Chairman Olson and members of the committee, my name is Barry Christensen. I'm a practicing pharmacist and currently serve as the co-chair of the Alaska Pharmacists Association Legislative Committee. Our association represents pharmacies, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, and pharmacy technicians in the state of Alaska. Our members work hard every day in retail pharmacies, hospitals, nursing homes, and medical clinic settings throughout the state. We're here today to ask for your support for legislation that would help create a level playing field for pharmacists when dealing with pharmacy audits. Our membership has made this our number one legislative priority. At the onset, let me assure you that the Alaska Pharmacists Association supports the needs for audits to ensure that fraud, waste, and abuse activities are checked. However, audits must be conducted in a fair and balanced manner, allowing for a fair appeal and payment for all services performed within the patient's benefit insurance benefit structure. There are pharmacists online to testify regarding their experience with pharmacy audits, so I will keep my testimony short. However, I would like to briefly outline how a typical prescription is processed and a record is generated so you have a feel for how an audit trail is produced. And I think Chris, come on up, has a little one-pager here. But I'll wait for him just for a minute. Okay, so what I'd like to highlight is a connection starting at the top from the consumer to the pharmacy, then down to the pharmacy, then to the left side, which indicates the pharmacy benefit manager, which we abbreviate as PBMs. In your packet, I believe there's a listing of the top PBMs, which some of you may recognize the names of, including Express Scripts, Medco, and Caremark. These are huge companies representing millions of patients. Pharmacies generally contract with PBMs in order to fill and bill prescriptions for consumers as part of their health benefit plan. Nearly all prescriptions are now filled electronically in real time. That is, the pharmacy sends prescription information to the PBM, and in turn, the PBM sends back authorization for payment and other clinical edits of concern, for example, high dose, drug interactions, etc. As you can see in the spreadsheet, the pharmacies are reimbursed back the cost of the medication plus a dispensing or professional fee that covers the cost of the pharmacy's cost of doing business. Typically, either the PBM or the entity contracted by the PBM will perform audits on contracted pharmacies to legitimately protect against fraud and abuse. It has been suggested by some that pharmacies should be able to contractually deal with their auditing concerns directly with the contracted PBM. I wish it were this easy. Most Alaska pharmacists that I have spoken to have never been able to alter the terms of a contract given to them, except for perhaps dispensing fees. It is usually a take-it-or-leave-it offer. That is why we are asking for some standardization and auditing practices that would be applicable to all plans and pharmacies in the state. As I said, I know there are others waiting to testify, but I do welcome your questions at this time. And I could address the last question that was addressed to, that didn't maybe get answered by Chris.
Oh, yeah, we want to start okay. with that
so, one. Yeah, so through the chair, I believe the question was how are pharmacy audits paid for? And the answer to that is usually the PBM either on its own has its own auditing department, or they would contract out with another entity to perform the audit. And so in that sense, it's probably the cost is borne by the PBM. However, recoupment from pharmacy can recoup that cost. That makes sense.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I'm going to just explore this a little bit, Mr. Christensen. Sure. The pharmacy benefits manager works for, try and put it in terms of, you know, between a big drug company and my doctor and Fred Meyer or you know, Safeway Pharmacy kind of thing.
Sure. I should have probably explained that a little more. On your sheet there, it shows that theoretically the pharmacy benefit manager works for the health insurer provides services that include contracting with the pharmacy to be able to process a claim. You'll also see on there they negotiate with drug manufacturers, typically rebates that come back to the PBM and or the health insurer.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay. And where does the dispensing fee come in? And
on the chart, it would be coming back from the PBM to the pharmacy in that arrow.
So,
and also in that would be the cost of the drug.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And how much is a typical dispensing fee?
It varies in this state considerably depending on your area. Depending on the plan, it can go from anywhere from probably $2 to $10, I'd say. Okay. Again, depending on where you are, depending on how many prescriptions the pharmacy is filling.
So is that on a dollar basis then, or a percentage, or both?
Dispensing fees are almost always on a dollar basis, not a percentile.
What current standards are the PBMs operating under at this point in time, or are there standards?
I would argue there aren't really any standards in the contracts that pharmacies sign. There'll probably be something in there about audits and the possibility of an appeal process, but it's not standardized, not by any means.
So obviously it would vary from company or major medical company to, you know, from Blue Cross to whoever.
That's correct, and I think it would probably also vary depending on the pharmacy. A larger corporation might get a different contract than a smaller pharmacy would.
But there are no standards?
No.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To go back to the overpayment and underpayment, it must be based on the actual payment?
Yes.
Are you sure you want to do that?
Through the chair. This bill is a work in motion. We've done a little bit of research, and we found that most other bills also have a limit on the number of prescriptions to be audited each time. And I think that we'll probably be coming up with a number. In fact, we have a number in mind.
Mr. Chairman, because I see huge administrative hassles for pharmacists. They find one mistake and just keep going and keep going and keep going until they find more and more and more. And it's kind of like as opposed to just saying, okay, well, there's 3 out of 1,000, so, you know, let's just do this and settle it. Would it be advantageous to have the option? If you were to say that you could, and I just jotting down some notes off the top of my head, that you can either A, pay it, or if it's too much, ask for the overpayment to be exactly what it is. Because I just see spending a lot of time with auditors as opposed to dispensing and doing what you're supposed to be doing, and that's helping people. So, you know, I just want you to think very carefully about that, because it's used quite a bit to average, and you see things down the road, and you kind of extrapolate out, and, you know, maybe you're not lucky, and they get 3 out of 5, and you got a problem. They may not get any, and you don't have any problems. So give that some thought, because that's, you're going to spend a lot of time with auditors if they start finding, have to go through and find everything that's been done, or maybe for a year, or, you know, there's a certain period. But somehow you need to rein that in my opinion. I think you're opening yourself up for a huge clerical and administrative nightmare if you said it will be on the actual payment, because they're going to be looking very hard. But I think you just told us how they got paid.
Through the chair, if I may. I understand what you're saying. There, like I said, the one thing this bill would do as is put a time limitation on the number of years they can go back, which I think is a good thing. I think, to be honest, the other thing is, I think pharmacists are fairly, as a group, we're fairly detail-oriented. So mistakes, I think, are the number of mistakes that are made are minimal, to be quite frank with you. I'll just say that's my own personal opinion. So I understand what you're saying, and it'll be an interesting topic to bring up to the other pharmacists.
Kind of this off the subject, how do you read my doctor's writing? Well, how do you know to give me what he's written down?
Through the chair?
I mean,
through the chair,
special class.
It's difficult, but fortunately we're going a lot to electronic prescribing, which doesn't mean there's not going to be mistakes, mind you. Because we find that even with the new electronic prescribing, we still find lots, I won't say lots, but I'll say numerous mistakes. The physician or prescriber still has to go through, find the right drug on the screen, still has to hit the right button for the directions. It's what we call, it's got SIG codes, so they're coded. We have a new challenge, I think, now, and that's the computer challenge, which is a good thing, but I think it'll take a while before we get there 100%.
My doctor still writes them.
He does? All right.
Still does.
Representative Sandler.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My question would be, given all the different entities that can request audits, is there any limit on how often a pharmacist can be subject to audit? You know, how much of a pharmacist's time is spent rolling pills, filling prescriptions? How much of it is spent going through records and answering audit questions?
Through the chair. That's a good question. It varies. I can tell you that when we do get them, they take a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to copy the records, and most of the time, most of our audits right now are, at least in my practice, are desk audits, but they still take lots of time. You're right. The bill doesn't say anything about how often a pharmacy can be audited. That's true.
Even if guess, I don't know.
I'm sorry.
5% of your time, 20% of the time. I mean, it takes some time to reason away from the day job to do.
Yes, it certainly does, and it's. We don't, at least in my pharmacy practice, we do not get an audit request every day. But when we do, a lot of times it'll be 20 or 30 prescriptions. It's a matter of fitting it in to the regular workload. Typical pharmacies are pretty busy. So, and every, you know, all the time we have to spend on that is less time doing other things, like talking to patients about their medicines, which is why most of us came into the profession. Was not to do paperwork.
So is it fair to say that you have to absorb some of those costs in your overhead?
Definitely, okay. Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What are the intentions with this bill? Are we going to try to move it? Are we going to try
no,
to
I, work I, on I think there's going to be more than enough public testimony to get us through this meeting and probably one more.
Okay.
It's not moving today.
I appreciate that. But I think you want to be very careful what you ask for. And really look at it. I want to help you all I can. I don't want audits and that kind of stuff taking time away, but I also don't want to get in a situation where we build a bureaucracy that you have to do like so many doctors have done. They have a business office to handle a section, and I hate to see pharmacies having to have a business person there all the time because there's just this, we've created this cycle of audits so I want you to just be thinking about how to address some of my concerns, and I'll help you anyway I can. I want to see this go forward, but I want to go see it forward in a way that in 3 years, you're not coming to us saying, man, we have bogged ourselves down with more paperwork than we know what to do, and we've had to hire two extra people just to handle it. So I want to make sure that if we do it, we do have the proper benefit that you're looking for and not send us all down a rabbit hole we're going to regret going. So I'd like some serious thought to go into some of this stuff.
Through the chair, I appreciate that. I will say that I believe we have somewhere between 15 and 20 states that have had it in the books for a while. I haven't heard necessarily any negative content, negative feelings, or I should say, about that. But it's something that definitely we should talk about. Yeah.
So this bill is off a model that is yep. being used nationally?
That's correct. Mr. Chair, this bill was modeled after model legislation from the National Community Pharmacists Association.
That was one piece we were missing.
Right.
Yeah, so far it's working. How long has it been in place, do you know, offhand, roughly? Or,
I want to say 5 to 10 years.
So it's been in place long enough to get most of the kinks out of it, theoretically?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if you look, and I think your bull packet has it, that there is variations from state to state, for sure.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where do these auditors come from? Who do they work for? How are they engaged? And then can you walk me through just a real simple view of an auditor sends you a note, says he wants to look at some of your records. He shows up. What happens then?
Actually, I might be able to help you with that. I think we've got several of them signed up to testify.
Oh, all right. Well, then let me skip to my second question. I see here that we are indicating that an auditor may not receive compensation based on the percentage of the amount recovered. I'm assuming that's some of what goes on today.
That's correct.
Okay. So then when the auditor finishes, he shall provide a copy of his final report to a health benefit plan sponsor that's been affected by the audit. He doesn't provide that to the pharmacy or to a doctor or to a patient?
Through the chair. Typically, the auditing entity, which would be the PBM itself or whoever was contracted through the PBM, would obviously notify the pharmacy. What the intent of that line is that the health insurer would also be notified. So let me try to bring it back into this state. There's a company called Envision RX, RX Options, that is a PBM that operates for the state of Alaska employee plan. Then in that example, if we were audited, if pharmacy was audited by that company, if the legislation went through, then the state would be notified of what happened during that audit.
But again, not a patient, not a doctor
that
was affected.
No, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Sir. Mr. Christensen, my question was on page 2, line 16. It's paragraph 8, an auditor may only provide info to a person requesting the audit and the pharmacy being audited. Is this a problem? Is there an issue with security of information or somebody learning things about a pharmacy practice that they shouldn't?
Through the chair, that item is in there so that to protect the pharmacy from... From free rein, for lack of a better example, for them, let's say that they decided to trade information on which pharmacies may be audited.
Which pharmacist?
Which trading information on? Hey, maybe you should go audit. Maybe you should go audit that pharmacy because we were just there and we did pretty good off them. Maybe you ought to go try that.
Okay. One of the few things I know about is the HIPAA, the patient's rights and patient's privacy. Does that apply here at all, or is that just purely for patients? Is there any other legal protection for the confidentiality of information?
I believe there would be for the patient information part, yeah. So I guess what we're talking about here is, if you're allowed to prepare by the auditor for the particular pharmacy being audited. Yeah, so we wouldn't be talking about necessarily, I don't think we'd be talking about the patient information in that part of that audit. Just the, for example, the type of error, that occurred.
That's, I guess I'm still coming at this from a patient's point of view, but, okay. But again, is this much of a problem in the industry right now? The people saying, hey, we got a lot of money off them, you should go audit them?
Not to my knowledge, no. I think it's kind of a safekeeping kind of thing. I mean, I think it's kind of a fear, if you will. Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other laws that protect this?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And if I could, another general line of questions, actually a whole new line of question, actually. We prepare fiscal notes to estimate the impact on the state's finances of legislation.
Yes.
If I were to ask you, kind of estimate, would this bill be to the benefit of the industry? Who would benefit and who would lose from this bill? Would financially?
Financially?
Mm-hmm.
Well, financially, if pharmacies are being extrapolated, or in the example given, for $7,000 on $80 worth of claims, then financially the pharmacy would be taking the hit, and the entity would be getting the money. So it would benefit the PBM or the health plan sponsor if it makes it back that far.
So if it prevents the extrapolation, if it prevents getting dinged for the dispensing fees, and this would adhere to the benefit of the pharmacist?
Correct, or keep us whole. I mean, we're not talking about us making more money, granted, but it's keeping us whole.
Okay, cool, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Can you tell me the percentage of each of the three kinds of audits?
I'm sorry?
The percentage, I mean, is desktop 190%?
Oh.
In pharmacy, 10%, and the investigation audit, 1%. Can you tell me how many are actually done? You know, I mean, how many are done? Is it documented anywhere?
It is not, to my knowledge. There's no documentation of that. Although I will tell you, from industry standard practice, desktop audits are much more prevalent. For the simple reason is it doesn't cost very much money. You don't have to send somebody to Alaska to do an audit. You can just have the pharmacy send in copies of the prescription information. So it's financially, it's a lot. I would think it's a lot cleaner, a lot less expensive for the PBM or for the auditor to do it that way.
Thank you. Well, so what would a pharmacy have to do to get an investigational audit?
Well, I think there probably have to be some kind of tip off. I mean, I think there would have to be something, and then. Certainly, when all of our prescriptions are going through electronically, if you, for example, notice that a pharmacy is dispensing a whole lot of one different kind of medicine that happens to be real expensive, that was way above what a similar pharmacy would do, that should be a tip-off for the PBM or the insurance company to say, hey, that seems a little weird that all of a sudden that pharmacy is dispensing a lot of this expensive medicine when a similar store down the street or in another town is not doing the same.
Mr. Chairman, I guess my question is, are we coming up with a solution looking for a problem? I mean, is there a problem with these audits? I mean, we don't even know how many there are.
You're right, we don't. But if you listen to the testimony, I think it's going to follow me, you'll find out from one pharmacist that he feels it's a big problem for him. But we don't have a means of tracking because, for one reason, PBMs in this state are not regulated. We don't have a number of known prescription benefit managers in this state. So from that, we wouldn't know how many audits there are.
Would it be beneficial to have in this legislation something where the number of audits performed or reported to the state somehow, to occupational licensing or somewhere or other, somebody's got to be counting this? Would that be a benefit to know exactly how many were being done of each type?
Through the chair,
you'd even want to know.
I guess that'd be a lot more paperwork somebody's got to keep track of.
That's what we deal with.
Okay.
What happens in a situation where you have a couple that has two insurance policies, two major medical insurance policies,
mm-hmm.
both of which might be paying on the same drug? One of them paying primary and one paying
the copay.
What would an audit do? Would one company notify the other company of a discrepancy?
I think that not typically. So you're saying that if there was a problem with an auditor came in and found out a problem with part of the with the claim, and the auditor was, for example, the representing the secondary insurance, would they notify the primary insurance? Is that your question?
Yeah.
I don't believe so. No. Not typically.
Because on a high-priced drug, it could be a significant amount of money for either the primary or the copay.
That is true.
So the industry is wide open at this point in time, as far as the audits go. There are no standards?
That's correct. When you say standards, again, we have part of the problem is we have an unknown number of PBMs that. So we have a bunch of different contracts, and there can be different contract languages in there. So, and I don't believe any of them would say that they all conform to the same standard for auditing.
Are any of the other states doing standards on PBMs?
Yes.
And that would address some of these issues, obviously.
Yes, I believe it would. Our association was concerned about that, and for a couple of years tried to pursue legislation regarding that, but we decided to drop that portion because we just ran into too much opposition.
Do you know roughly how many states do that? Is it about the same number that are are we looking at 20 states that may already be doing that, or
Yes, I believe that'd be pretty accurate. We have people on the line, actually, that can answer that nationally, those numbers.
Oh, excellent. And we'll be getting to them.
Okay.
Any further questions? Representative Sadler?
Two quick ones. What is, Mr. Christian, what is the audit cycle? Is that like a year? Is that just the cycle when it's requested? And my second question goes to similarly situated pharmacies. But to start off, what is an audit cycle?
I believe an audit cycle would just be, for example, if a set number of claims during a set period of time, I think would be an audit cycle.
So that's typically range.
That's typically what pharmacies receive is 50 prescriptions from on these dates of services from January to January.
And that would constitute the cycle, or then that they came back again and said, well, now we want 50 more of a different kind of. Would that be part of the whole cycle? I don't know how the audits work, but you're saying that it's a range, a request to an audit pharmacy, give us the information on 20 prescriptions over this period of time. That's the cycle? Or would it be the situation where they make that request, get those results, and then say, oh, well, we'd like to know a little bit more about this thing, so here's another request. Is that double cycle? Is that
through the chair, I see what you're asking. I would need to clarify that. Be honest with you, which actually probably can be done online through somebody who's online with the National Community Pharmacists Association that's helped other states draft this language.
And my last question, or my next question,
yeah.
My last is
I thought you said two.
How many in Alaska? How many classes of pharmacies could be considered similarly situated? Two different. Three different, four different, five different kinds of pharmacists.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have pharmacists that specialize, for example, in compounding, which is you might want to call it the old-fashioned pharmacy. They take medications that aren't commercially available, and make them into a product that patients can use. Then you'd have things like IV home infusion pharmacies that prepare IVs for home use. Then you have your standard retail pharmacies. So your typical chain pharmacies, your independent pharmacies.
Okay.
Those would be the primary ones.
But it's not as if one would be like a native health clinic or a big city hospital or a small. Those aren't similar situated.
Those wouldn't be similar situated with the examples I just gave. They would kind of be in their own. I would consider them to be in their own similarly situated.
So there's the three. There's compounding, IV home infusion. Standard retail, then
there would be things like clinic type, for example, native health clinic type pharmacies. They bill insurance companies, hospital pharmacies, but I don't believe they would be involved with this because it's a separate deal.
How about doctors that repackage?
That's a good question. If they bill third-party insurance, then theoretically they would be, they could be audited. They could be a class within that too.
Any further questions for Mr. Christensen? Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do notice that within the language there's a couple places where you mention underpayments as well. Let us say that we have an audit and underpayments are found. I recognize that the language within this bill also says that we're only going to disclose that information from the audit to the PBM. I'm assuming, again, there's no way for a doctor or a patient who may have overpaid to actually be notified that this has happened then.
That's correct.
So there's really no protection for patients in this. This is basically the PBMs trying to make sure they're doing, or I should say the pharmacies are doing due diligence to them.
That's correct.
And that's the focus.
That would be the focus.
Okay.
That's correct. Through the chair.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Before we go on to the people that are on the phones, is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill that's not signed up? And for the committee's knowledge, we do have John Sherwood from Health and Social Services and Don Habiger from Commerce in the room for questions only if we need them. So if at some point you got the urge to ask either one of them a question, let me know. Seeing nobody in the room, we will go to, how about Matt Delaretto, Washington, D.C.?
Yes, sir. This is Matt DiLoretto with the National Community Pharmacists Association. Can everyone hear me?
Yeah, and thank you for joining us today and waiting patiently.
Oh, no problem at all. No problem at all. I trust that everyone has the testimony that I prepared. I just plan on reading that, and then I'll get to any of your questions. On behalf of the National Community Pharmacists Association, I wish to thank you for conducting this hearing. NCPA testifies today in strong support of House Bill 259, is legislation that provides fair and common sense protections for pharmacies against what are currently abusive audit practices by the PBMs. Let me first be clear. This legislation does not prevent audits from occurring for their intended purpose of preventing fraud, waste, and abuse. In fact, Section B of this legislation specifically states standards within HB 259 do not apply when pertaining to criminal investigation or an investigation by a government agency. And on a side note, I just want to let you know that that's fairly common language, not word for word, but in other states as well. NCPA members understand that audits must occur to catch fraud and abuse within the system. However, current PBM audits of pharmacy are in many cases simply being used as a lucrative revenue source. NCPA represents America's independent community pharmacists, including the owners of more than 23,000 community pharmacies, franchises, and chains. Together, they employ 300,000 full-time employees and dispense nearly half of the nation's retail prescription medicines. In Alaska alone, there are over 39 community pharmacies, which employ a projected 413 residents. The average independent community pharmacy generates $4 million in annual revenue and employs 10.6 full-time individuals. Alaska's independent community pharmacies generate $157 million in annual revenue. Also, those community pharmacies support additional revenue to other state businesses in the amount of $141 million annually and support additional full-time employment to other businesses equal to 165 employees. NCPA has long championed the need for greater oversight of pharmacy benefit managers and many of their questionable business practices due to the problems our members and their patients continue to face. One of the largest problems that NCPA pharmacist members face in today's pharmacy marketplace is the issue of abusive audit practices. This issue occurs nationwide, and many states are taking steps to protect their pharmacists and small business owners. Today, about 15 states have implemented some level of audit protections. And on another side note, I'd like to say about 23 states also have some level of PBM regulation or transparency legislation. I heard that being discussed earlier. It is not uncommon for these audits to penalize an independent pharmacy tens of thousands or even, and this is not an exaggeration, hundreds of thousands of dollars for nothing more than a clerical or administrative mishap, many of which are not the fault of the pharmacy. Let me be clear that the so-called errors I am referring to are instances in which the correct medicine was dispensed to the correct person and the correct fee was charged to the patient and the plan. Let me provide you with a recent example of a quote-unquote minor audit that an NCPA member went through. This member was penalized $14,000 for not using a physician number in their computer system. The catch was that in this case, it was a certified nurse practitioner that wrote the order, so there was no physician number to log in the system. The prescriber was not a physician. The pharmacist took measures to ensure he was properly compliant and even contacted the insurance company, who indicated this was not a problem and he should just use the CRNT license number, and he did this. In addition, he also attached a copy of the CRNT's actual license to the file prescription, so it was clear that what he was doing. He then logged the phone call information to further protect himself. Even so, when he was audited, the PBM demanded $14,000 back for this prescription. After all the steps the pharmacist took to ensure he was acting properly, he ultimately settled this issue for $12,000. The pharmacist was doing exactly what he was told to do by the insurance company and even took additional steps to make sure everything was properly documented. Even so, this pharmacist, small business owner, took a $12,000 loss. These stories occur on a regular basis. Similar stories have resulted in pharmacists being fined $250,000 or more. And I can vouch for that specifically. Previous to my current position, I was the director of government relations in Pennsylvania, and the $250,000 story actually happened to one of our members. Rather than legitimately using the audit practice to guard and protect against fraud, many PBMs now view the process as a profitable revenue stream for the company. In fact, many auditors are incentivized by receiving payment based on the percentage of money they reclaimed. PBMs now go well beyond the basic intent of an audit to catch fraud and abuse and instead focus on typographical errors or administrative errors or small loopholes in the rules and regulations, such as the bus story, as a basis to recoup money from the pharmacy. In many cases, if a PBM auditor identifies an administrative error, he will take back 100% of the value of that prescription and every single refill that came with it, a severe financial penalty that is out of proportion to the gravity of the offense. Another egregious practice by PBMs is that they employ, in order to ensure that discrepancies will be found, is to establish elaborate record-keeping requirements well in excess of what is required under the state or federal law or other PBMs. Pharmacies typically maintain contracts with multiple PBMs. The result is a myriad of conflicting documentation requirements that can make operating a busy pharmacy and providing patients care an even greater challenge. NCPA is confident that once members review HB 259, they will see the measures spelled out are reasonable standards to ensure that abuses do not occur. In circumstances when fraud or legitimate errors occur, independent pharmacists understand that steps must be taken to correct these errors and recoup a reasonable sum of money. As business owners, independent pharmacists realize that there are individuals in every profession that may try to work the system. In those cases, we fully support the recoupment of money. These instances are not what is being referred to today. In conclusion, NCPA urges your support of HB 259, legislation that will provide pharmacies an understandably needed degree of protection against the over-aggressive and far-reaching PBM audit practices. We pharmacists understand that in business, there must be audits to identify those instances where true fraud occurs. However, these audits should not be utilized to only increase PBM profit margins. I thank you for taking NCPA's concerns into consideration. I welcome your questions at this time.
Any questions? Thanks again for joining us today. Tom Hodell, are you with us, Tom?
Hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, my name is Tom Hodell. I'm a pharmacist owner of Soldotna Professional Pharmacy for 28 years. And I'd just like to give you all a little overview of a recent audit that we're still involved in right now. But We have had several audits over the years, mostly with very minimal adjustments and payments. In the spring of 2011, we were notified by an audit firm that they would be performing a desk audit on over 100 prescriptions from the year 2008. I then had to make copies of all the required prescriptions and the signatures for each of these. Needless to say, this took a great deal of my time, mostly on the weekends, and especially since the records were from over 3 years ago. Everything was completed and mailed to them in the required time frame. Then a couple of months later, I was informed by this outfit that they were also scheduling an on-site audit of our pharmacy in June. When that scheduled date arrived, two staff members from the firm arrived the first thing in the morning, and I was pulling records for them the entire day. The two auditors were from out of state, and I was amazed at their lack of knowledge and terminology concerning the practice of pharmacy. A few weeks later, I received a preliminary report from them, and it started out by stating that out of over 100 prescriptions and over $100,000 in claims reviewed, they had an issue with four prescriptions and a total of less than $90 in claims. I was satisfied with this small amount, even though three of the four claims were absurd in my idea, and only one was a legitimate error on our part for $40. Then I got to the back page of the report and discovered that the $85 had become $7,300. I could not believe this. They used a term called a one-sided confidence interval formula to extrapolate the actual error total to a ridiculous sum. I sent in documentation on three of the errors that I thought were not appropriate, and that was rejected. A few weeks ago, I received a letter requesting that I send in a check for the $7,300 in quote-unquote overpayments by March 8th. I have since hired an attorney, and I'm in the process of appealing this decision. This will probably cost me more money in the long run, but I feel this is blatantly unfair. Extrapolation methods are only to be used when there have been patterns of abuse, and we at Soldat Professional Pharmacy have certainly not had that. Pharmacists strive every day to take care of their patients amongst an ever-changing and complicated billing system. Audits are an important mechanism for monitoring pharmacies and ensuring safe practice. However, they also need to be standardized and performed in a way that does not interfere with the healthcare services being provided by pharmacists. I thank you for your support of HB 259, and if anybody has any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. Thank you.
We've got at least one. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Hodel, a question for you. You said you had experienced several audits over the years. It sounds like that one particular one was egregious, but how widespread is this? I'm still looking for some kind of quantitative estimate of how often abusive auditing practices take place. Has this happened just one time in your career or practice or several times?
No, we have had several over the years. We've been in business for 28 years, sir, and as Barry Christensen said, I don't have a quantitative number on it, but we get desk audits all the time for, you know, three, four, five prescriptions, which, you know, take some time, but they're not too bad. But probably once or maybe twice a year we'll get an on-site audit from a Blue Cross or a Medco. Haven't had any in the last few years. They're certainly not as prevalent as they used to be, just because of the logistics of traveling to Alaska. And as Gary had stated, the desk audits are much more prevalent now.
Yeah. And a follow-up. Are there any limits to how many times you can be subject to audits?
I mean,
do you have any say-so?
No.
Thanks again, Tom.
Okay, Kurt. Thank you, sir.
Next one is Eric Douglas, CVS Caremark. Are you with us, Eric?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. My name is Eric Douglas. I'm Director of Government Affairs for CVS Caremark for the Western U.S., and I'm here to testify in opposition to House Bill 259. The four sections in HB 259 cover numerous audit practices and procedures which are overly prescriptive and would hinder our ability to perform audit functions on behalf of our clients. To give you a little bit of background, CVS Caremark not only is a large PBM, but we're also the largest chain pharmacy in the United States. We have about 7,400 CVS pharmacies in 47 states. And some of the things that were mentioned today I can address in a moment, but we have about 66,000 pharmacies in our network that through various different ERISA plans, clients, government agencies, businesses that contract either with an insurer or through us to help manage their prescription benefit for their employees or their insured beneficiaries. And the function that we serve in terms of doing an audit is to ensure that the prescriptions, or the claims rather, that are being filed properly, and that the claims are valid. And when we recoup monies, we're not recouping the monies for ourselves, we're recouping the monies for our clients. So, for example, there's a section in the bill that talks about not recouping a dispensing fee. The dispensing fee is part of the overall payment. And I believe the proponents would say, well, the reason they want to keep it is because they've filled a prescription and they've done some work. And that's true. But if the prescription was filled incorrectly, or they can't produce the prescription record or something of that nature, and it is recouped on audit, we're not going to just recoup the cost of the drug, but we have to recoup the cost that they've been paid to dispense as well, because that money doesn't belong to us. It doesn't belong to the pharmacy at that point. It belongs to the client who paid for that prescription. And that's why we think that things like that in the bill just really hinder the ability for a PBM to continue to operate. A couple of other things that were mentioned. The example that I believe it was Representative Munoz who spoke in the beginning about a very small error that was committed and the entire claim was recouped. Now, I don't know who did that. I can't speak for who did that, and I don't believe it was mentioned. But I can tell you that for clerical errors, Scrivener's errors, things like that, Caremark does not recoup for those types of errors. We don't extrapolate. So we don't take the practice of you look at 100 records and you find an error in 4, and as was explained earlier, some bad actors or some PBMs may extrapolate that out. But most often, the groups that are engaged in that activity are, the parlance for the industry is a RAC auditor. They work off of they're not a PBM. They only audit. And they're subcontracted out, typically because perhaps the insurer or the PBM doesn't have the sophistication or ability to do the audit on their own. So they'll hire someone to work on a contingency fee basis, and of course they have a vested interest in being able to maximize the number of errors they find, because that's how they get paid. We don't employ those types of entities. And I think the problem with this particular bill is you're taking a valid methodology that's used to keep fraud, misuse, abuse, overpayments out of the system, to keep costs down and to give the monies back when they were incorrectly paid. And you're including some situations where there truly are bad actors that need to be addressed, but you're throwing in PBMs who practice good practices in with this. And that's our I guess opposition to this bill. And there are 15 states that have audit laws. Now there are other kinds of PBM laws, but we're talking about an audit bill. So there are 15 states in the United States that have audit bills right now, or audit laws rather, and they vary in you know what they say, but many of them are very similar. And this particular model language is an association's model language that they would like to see. But it's not really a model language based off of exactly what, you know, the majority of these states that have passed audit laws say. And that's another issue. We typically, when we see a bill introduced in any given state, it consists of model legislation. No one's approached us about what they want about the bill, had a conversation, anything like that. And here we're faced with the story that all PBMs are bad, and we firmly don't believe that. And I don't want to run over my time, but I will would like to make one other point. The point's been made that PBMs are not regulated, and that also isn't true. It is true to say there is no state agency in Alaska that's the PBM state regulation agency. But PBMs are required to comply with numerous existing regulations and laws. We are licensed as third-party administrators, preferred provider organizations, utilization review organizations, resident and non-resident pharmacies, where we have, you know, mail order facilities. If we are mailing into the state of Alaska, then we are registered with the Board of Pharmacy. Our pharmacist is licensed in the PIC anyway, is licensed in the state of Alaska. So to say that we're, you know, just a wholly unregulated industry really isn't true. And so those are the major points that I'd like to make. My written testimony has been submitted to staff for inclusion in the record. And thank you for allowing me to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, sir. How long has CVS Caremark been in what I'm going to call the PBM business?
Yes, sir, Representative and Chairman. The two companies merged. CVS Pharmacy was its own company, and Caremark was its own company, and they merged in 2007.
Okay.
So 5 years.
Okay. Over the past, I guess since 2007, have collections resulting from audits gone down, stayed level, or increased? For overpayment or for dispensing fees, that kind of stuff.
Representative, I don't know the answer to that. Do you mean for CVS Caremark or for the industry overall?
If you can speak for the whole industry, that'd be great, but just I'd ask to speak to your company.
Well, I suppose to the extent that our business has grown, one might be able to make the assumption that recoupments from audits have grown by virtue of the fact that you have more clients. But we're not, you know, we're not auditing more often. We're not recouping more per audit. And if that's what you're talking about,
yes,
that's not the case. But, you know, if we expand our business by 25%, then certainly the following year, one would think, based on the number of audits that we do on average, that you probably are going to have more recoupments because you have more business.
That's fair. Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since you just mentioned the 25% increase in business, is that due to having more branches, dispensing more pharmaceuticals, or is that just profit margin?
Well, Representative and Chairman, that was hypothetical. I didn't mean that we've increased our business 25%. I'm just saying if you did, that would be reflective. But, yes, to the extent that you open more pharmacies, they're going to be dispensing in cities and towns where they never have before. And if the PBM is able to get clients that they haven't previously had, or a business decides that they're going to contract with an insurance company with which we do business, and we pick up business that way, or a federal agency, something like that, then sure. But, you know, the number of businesses out there that are using PBMs, businesses, insurance companies, ERISA plans, et cetera, that it's fairly finite, and it's a pretty competitive business. That's why we would argue, you know, there are three major PBMs, that's true, but there are about 50 PBMs that exist, and certainly on a regional basis, there's very competitive PBM business throughout the country.
Thanks again. And we've got two people online at the Fairbanks LIO that have made a major effort to get there. And Gerald Brown, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for joining us today.
My name is Gerald Brown. I am a independent pharmacist in Fairbanks, Alaska. I manage Prescription Center Pharmacy in Fairbanks. Today I wanted to call in support of House Bill 259. I think it's a good bill. We right now have no protection against PBMs and PBM audits at this time, and I feel that as you've heard some of the pharmacies testify, the fines can be quite onerous, and they can be at any time, at the whim of the PBM. So they can come in and audit you whenever they want to, for whatever time period they want to. We're so inundated with the work and that sort of thing that it's very hard to, you know, get have the time and available to actually respond to some of these audits. Plus the fact that they can be very onerous in their punitive actions. So I believe that this is a good bill. It's a great start, and we really need to have more transparency in what PBMs do and how they act, because they are getting a lot of money from the drug companies in rebates, in the form of rebates. They are coercing the drug companies to get onto their formularies, to get into the lower tiers of the payment process. And yet we're doing this as pharmacists for dispensing fees of $2. Now, that's great if the product is $1 or $10 or $20, just to get a dispensing fee of that. But we just had one here that was $7,500, and our dispensing fee was $2. And then when they come back and audit you, and you run the risk of having an audit where they would say, well, we're not going to pay you because you did something wrong, because their costs were upside down, or they say that we paid $66,000 for it, and we really paid $7,500 for it, and then they add the $2 dispensing fee, and we got $7,500 and $2. Now they're going to take all of that away from us as a punitive action. You kind of wonder how in the world a pharmacy can exist, let alone have the pharmacy go to the bank and borrow money to become a pharmacy. So we just feel that this bill doesn't answer all the questions, but at least it makes it so that we're not facing undue audits and undue penalties because of those audits. And I would stand to answer any questions that you might have.
Any questions? I see somebody from Fairbanks with at least one question. Representative Thompson.
Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
How many audits have you had over the last 5 years?
Well, we've as far as death audits, we will have at least 4, 5, 6 death audits every quarter. So we've had, you know, quite a few that are death audits. Actual on-site audits, I haven't had one in probably about 3 or 4 years. So we've not had any on-site audits here in that time period. I think a lot of it's because of logistics. They just don't want to come up this far for an audit like that. We also try to keep all of our records pretty clean. So we really watch to see that we don't set ourselves up for an audit. And so because of that, I think that is one of the reasons why our audit frequency is probably fairly low.
Paula?
Yes, you said 4, 5, or 6 a quarter. That'd be 20 a year. Are any of those audits where they might say we want to audit 25 different prescriptions on each one of those 20 audits per year, or is that, you mean they audited 5 different prescriptions? Which one is that?
Usually they're looking for at least 5 to 10 prescriptions per audit, and the audits come in from various insurance companies or third parties that are looking for just looking for any error that they can find in a prescription. It doesn't have to have an error. They're just doing a straight-out audit, which causes our staff to then go back, pull the prescription, pull a photocopy of the original, send in all the information that goes with that prescription to justify that we filled the prescription, that the patient filled it, and we have a signature of them receiving it. So we have to go and pull all of those bits of information for that particular, each of those prescriptions. So there may be 10 or 20 in an audit. But the number of times that I'm saying per quarter, four, five, six times that we get audited per quarter, that each of those would represent another 10 or 15 prescriptions or so.
Hello?
Yeah, one other thing. So it sounds like they go on a fishing expedition. How many errors have they found over that period of time or out of that quantity?
As far as they know, none.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We have one last person in Fairbanks. Margaret Sodden, are you with us?
Yes, this is Margaret Soden, and I'm a past president of the Alaska Pharmacists Association and a mostly retired community pharmacist. I just retired a couple years ago, and I'd like to thank you all for hearing our feelings about how important it is and how we wish that you would support HB 259. When I first started out as a pharmacist 45 years ago, most of the prescriptions that I filled were for patients who handed me some money for their prescriptions, and I did not bill an insurance company. Now, the majority of prescriptions are billed to third parties, and along with that third-party billing comes the audit of our pharmacy records. And House Bill 259 is just intended to bring some standardization and fairness into the audit process. The provisions of this bill will allow us time to comply with an audit request, and then it will also cause less disruption to the patient care that we provide in our pharmacies. And that's our main purpose of being in the pharmacy, is to fill prescriptions for our patients, make sure that they're getting the right drug, the right dose, for the right period of time. And that's our primary concern, and audits just tend to take away our time from our patients and from them getting the best health care that we can provide. And I thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to participate. And it's my intention to hold the public testimony open. We have a number of pharmacists that haven't had an opportunity to weigh in, and also a number of PBM, so I think we've probably got at least one full afternoon of further testimony. And with that, we'll adjourn at 5 minutes after 5.